I'd like to convene the Finance Committee. We have a quorum present. Representative Solberg was here bright and early this morning. Have you reviewed the minutes? And you moved their approval. Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The first bill this morning was the one that we didn't quite get to. It was the only one, actually, we didn't get to yesterday on the agenda. So Representative Bill is first up with the omnibus game and fish bill. So Representative Wagenius, would you care to move the division report?
Thank you, I will. I move the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division report for House File 3547, Second Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Wagenius?
I move House File 3547, Second Committee Engrossment, to be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Okay, the motion is before us, and Representative Bill, you want to explain the bill, but one of the things I want to do, in fact, I'll practice what I preach here. We had a little audio problem yesterday. It should be all right, but that reminded me that we should always keep our cell phones turned off. I don't think that was the problem yesterday. It was something else, but sometimes the cell phones lead to some difficulties. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3547, Mr. Chair, I'd like to take the A14 amendment first, and that'll get the bill in the financial shape that Representative Wagenius and I would like to have it in. And that is the A14 amendment, and members, someone move it, please.
Okay, Representative Wagenius?
Well, I haven't seen it, but I will move it.
Okay. The motion is before us. Maybe you...
I found it.
Oh, okay. Explain the amendment.
Yes, I'd like to move amendment to A14.
Okay, the motion is before us, and Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the bill, the way it's currently written, there's some provisions regarding aquatic farms, aquaculture, basically has to do with minnows. And that was in the bill, and on the fiscal note, the 2CE fiscal note, it is listed as a general fund expenditure. This amendment would move that out of the general fund and move it over into the game and fish fund, where we believe it should be. And as you'll notice, it puts $102,000 in 09, puts $110,000, it puts $150,000 in the base, and in 11, it zeroes it out.
Right.
And the purpose of the money is to create best management, allow the DNR some funds to do best management practices so that they can, working with the minnow dealers and the growers, purpose of the amendment.
Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Bill, is the bill in the order you want to present it in?
I'm ready. I'm just going to quick give a little briefing on the bill, Mr. Chairman, if you can take that now. Really, the crux of the fiscal note is relating to deer provisions that eliminate, right now, members, you have a license that you buy archery, rifle, and muzzleloader in all one license. And so what we're doing in the bill is we're proposing to make just a firearms license, which is a muzzleloader and a gun, and you can buy the archery a la carte as a separate license. And that's a cost to the Game and Fish Fund. And then there's also a conservation license that's a $520,000 cost to the Game and Fish Fund. And then there is a conservation license that Senator Bach and I have proposed. And what that is a light fishing license, a seasonal fishing license, that costs two-thirds of the cost of the year-round, of the full privilege license. But it only allows you two-thirds of the fish. And the idea is that we start a voluntary conservation program here. Where people can pay a little bit less for a license, two-thirds, one-third less, take fewer fish, and start to try and move towards this idea of conservation, maybe even have a license someday, just a catch and release license possibly. That's something we haven't really discussed. So that is the cost of the fund. And then in on the flip side of that cost, which is about $2.4 million to the fund, Representative Junkie in the bill has a two-line provision, which would allow people in open water to use two lines. Right now in ice fishing, you can use two lines through the ice. And Representative Junkie has a provision in the bill that allows for two lines in the summer or in the open water season. And we put on an endorsement on the license to use two lines. We put on an endorsement, I believe it's a $5. And then that would raise just over $1 million in revenue to offset some of the cost of the conservation license. And so Representative Legini, if they want to comment how we account for these things, it's a little bit above my pay grade yet to understand how we account for all of these things, but the DNR is, I think that the DNR is at least not objecting to any of those particular proposals that we discussed.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dill, could you walk me through again the changes to the deer hunting license? I guess the question is, are you making it more expensive, less expensive for somebody who's looking to hunt just archery, or, you know, vice versa, just firearms? I guess I'm trying to understand the why behind the change.
Representative
Dill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Representative Cole, what we're making it, the archery is a la carte. It's the same price now. What we did was we had a license where you took the cumulative sum of all the licenses added together and you had one license. I think it's called an all-season license. And what we're doing is we're breaking the archery off of the firearm. So actually, if you just only hunt archery, you'll pay, I think it's $57 less. Because before you were paying for all of the licenses. So the answer is that depending on just exactly what you're going to do, you could well pay less.
Hey, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dill. In your, what piqued my interest was the two-thirds license and requiring, I think it's two-thirds the limit. What are you doing, or could you pass along to me how you're explaining that to people with English as a second language? We've got, and I want to commend the DNR for their outreach in terms of trying to explain game and fish laws to people, but this is a kind of a change. You want to make sure that you don't catch people unintentionally doing something that they're not aware of.
Well, thank you. And of course, anytime you make this is kind of a philosophy change that we're proposing here. We're moving into a new kind of an era of thinking in terms of management of particularly fish. And there's going to be a period of time that people are going to be in flux, and they're not going to understand that. They won't have read the information. And, you know, we have some very efficient conservation officers out there in the field. And, you know, some of them are well known, in my community at least. And they're going to have to have some, you know, use some good judgment on, you know, how people do things and encourage people to understand the law and provide the pamphlets. Maybe Mr. Boggess could come up and talk on that. Or someone from enforcement. Is someone from enforcement here?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hunt.
I don't really need anyone to come up and talk to me. Anything in the interest of time, if they stop by my office or you just send it to me, I'd appreciate it.
That's good.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, you mentioned Senator Bach. Does he have a Senate file in on this? Do you know what the Senate file number is on the companion to your bill?
No, I don't know what the Senate file number is, the Chairman and Representative Anderson. I do not know what it is.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, do you know how significant, if there's any different major changes between the Senate and the House file?
Mr. Chair, no, there is not.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none then, there are a number of amendments.
Yeah,
okay, I didn't realize there were additional amendments. We will just take them in the order that they're here. There's an H 3547A11.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
I guess, is this an author's amendment, Representative Dill?
Yes, this is.
Okay, the chair moves the amendment to put it before us. Representative Dill?
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. On the A11 amendment, these are some, two items are technical. One is regarding a waterfowl and pheasant stamp that strikes the requirement to sign that because that's now an endorsement on the license. The item on line 1.6, the first item is regarding the definition of baiting, has to do with some changes that we made in previous years and doing some cleanup to get that to work properly for the department. And the last item is regarding a grouse hunting restriction and the distance you need to be from a motor vehicle when you take a grouse.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Guidance. The next one may be an author's amendment as well. It's A15. Chair moves the amendment. Representative Dill, if you'd explain the amendment.
Thank you. This has to do with the lake trout. The trout in Minnesota are essentially up along the border, the Boundary Waters area in northeastern Minnesota, in lakes and lakes and streams. This would extend the season from March 15th on the end of the season by 2 weeks. And if the fiscal note accounts for this cost that the DNR has say that will be incurred because of that. It does it for all lakes and streams presently. If a lake is half in and half out of the boundary waters, it closes at one time. If it's all the way out of the boundary waters, it's not in the boundary waters, it closes another time. So we're trying to streamline that and get that so that people have the opportunity to fish 2 weeks longer.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Dill, does this also deal with the conservation angling license at all, so this amendment?
Representative Dill?
No, Mr. Chair, it does not.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. I now have several, I guess, by Representative Hackbarth. I'll just take them in the order that they're stacked up. A08-1573.
Mr. Chairman, PLK with you. This is actually Representative Burns' amendment, and he's on his way in, and he's letting me hold off until he got here. So I'll take that again. He's not here to do it.
He's here.
Oh, is he here? Okay, there he is.
Okay, Representative Hackbarth, would you care to move the amendment?
I'll move the 1573 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, motion is before us. I assume the reason you were waiting is for him to explain the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it's Representative Burns.
Okay, Representative Burns.
Very brief.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. This is related to invasive species prevention, and this does not add new law. In a large area, it basically clarifies two loopholes very briefly. The first one is related to duck blinds, and if you read the statute as it is currently, if you have a duck blind in your boat, you don't have to clean off your trailer, and I don't think that's really the intent. This would not in any way affect a duck blind. It just would say you still got to clean off your trailer for aquatic weeds or prohibited invasive species. The second one is also a loophole, and both of these changes are supported by the DNR, by the way. And if you read section or line 1.19, you see it's clearly illegal to transport invasive species or aquatic macrophytes, and aquatic macrophytes are water plants. But to read below in 1.20 and 1.21, it's only illegal to get caught putting into the water invasive species. That just is not logically consistent that it's illegal to transport aquatic macrophytes, but it's not illegal to put them in the water. And this is just for the purpose of a warning or a civil citation. There's also another statute that relates to misdemeanor or criminal citation for the same conduct. And again, both these are supported by the DNR. They're also supported by the Minnesota Conservation Federation and Minnesota Waters.
Advice from the author?
Yep, fine with the amendment.
Any further discussion, Representative Hackmeyer?
Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that's on the General Register. The bill didn't move in the Senate, so we'd like to progress with it.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We have another amendment by Representative Hackmeyer, AO8 1590.
1590 amendment, Mr. Chairman, I'll move that.
Motion is before us, Representative Hackmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This one and the next one are a couple of amendments that were brought to me by the National Wild Turkey Federation. I believe these are supported by the DNR. I worked with Mr. Bogus at the DNR and Mr. Meyer, and I showed them to Representative Hill. The 1590 amendment creates a youth turkey hunting license. The process that we're going through in this bill has eliminated some language that has to do with turkey stamps. And youth did not have to buy the $5 turkey stamp, which was a reduced rate to youth when they're turkey hunting. So with getting rid of that language inadvertently, now if we leave it the way it currently is, youth would pay the same price as an adult, which is going to be $23. So we create a youth turkey hunting license with this amendment. The DNR is okay with this. I think Bill's okay with it. We can check with him. And the National Wild Turkey Federation is in support.
Justin Hackbart, initially you said you thought DNR was okay with this, and now you said they are. Which is it?
A lot of time I talked to them, they're okay with it. They're okay with it. And they can come up and speak to it if you
would. Okay, Representative Colbert.
Mr. Chair, does this change the fiscal notes at all? And maybe DNR should testify to that.
Representative Bill, have you had a chance to look at the amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did have a chance to talk with the department. If you look on line 1.10, where we raise, where the turkey price is changed, and that's not the turkey on the ledge on 4th and 5th floor either. they raise it to $23. That incorporates the $5 turkey stamp into the 23, which is actually in the bill already. But this amendment strikes that section and puts in a new piece, slightly different, in a different configuration. So therefore, we automatically raise, because we're cutting the other license essentially in half, we're capturing $2.50 of the $5 turkey stamp that we got on the front end when we charged it to the adult. So what that does, in talking with the department a few moments ago, they haven't done an exact fiscal analysis of this, but they believe that it's going to be a wash or near a wash in terms of expense versus income, because we raised the price on the top one and then we cut it in half. The $2.50 gain on the bottom end makes up for the lost revenue in the middle. So, I mean, the department is here and they can't come up and testify on it, but that's just what they told me in the last.
Well, we can ask some questions, however, if we get to that point.
Representative Dill, does this affect the game and fish fund as opposed to the general fund?
That is correct. It'd be a game and fish.
Thank you.
Maybe we should just ask, I'll ask DNR if they would come up and
Mr. Meyer,
give us their thoughts on it. But while they're coming up, Representative Kahn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm interested in the financing of the turkey license and so forth. I'm interested in knowing, is there still a waiting list to get that? How big is the waiting list? And what's the cost of the license, and what's the return to the Game and Fish Fund of the licensee?
Are you posing that to Representative Bill or?
I'm posing it to anyone in the room who knows the answer.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Ed Bogus, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife for the Department of Natural Resources. And I'm trying to get the information on the number of youth that are buying licenses so we can give a little more specific answer. But I agree, we are fine with the youth license. It's similar to what we've done with small game licenses and deer licenses for both resident and non-resident youth. And actually, the language that's currently in the bill raises revenue somewhat because we're charging everyone a charge for the equivalent of a stamp when not everyone had to have it, particularly youth in the past, but also fall turkey hunters. So we do think it's going to be pretty much a wash. In response to Representative Kahn's question, we're issuing about 35,000 turkey licenses a year right now. We get about 50,000 applications. I can't do the math in my head. The cost of a turkey license, it's in the bill here, I think, but it's $18 plus the stamp times 35,000 is the revenue that we're currently getting. So,
well, Mr.
Representative,
Chairman, it's always surprised me that we don't use some aspect of the free market system. We have something that has excess demand, and that means we're obviously, according to Adam Smith, underpricing it. So why don't we increase the price until there isn't any lag for, there isn't any disappointed people who don't get turkey licenses. And an alternative to do it, I know somehow it's undemocratic, even though I imagine that there aren't any really poor turkey hunters somehow. You know, the people, the welfare moms and the homeless kids and so forth aren't out, whom we're not giving enough to eat, aren't out turkey hunting. But the, why we don't at least take a section of those licenses and put them on a bid or an auction system and let them go to the highest bidder and see what that would raise. But there's something that there's demand for. It's clearly not a necessity. I don't understand why we don't raise the price. I don't have an amendment to do that here, obviously, but I don't understand why we don't raise the price so that we meet the demand and put more money into the game and fish fund. I don't know if there's any response from any of the two people at the desk. If the author is interested, we could prepare an amendment for the House floor. Since it would add money, I don't think it would be a problem. Well, Ways and Means or wherever the next step of the bill is.
Representative Dill.
We'll discuss it.
Good response. Representative Kohlberg, you were asking about the numbers that
I'm satisfied with.
Give you a satisfactory answer. Okay. We have Representative Cornish.
I'll pass and get in on the discussion with Representative Kahn.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, there is a study in the bill about turkey season already in the bill that we haven't even discussed, and that's something that can be looked at when they do the study that's in the bill. So that's the reason I said we'd discuss it.
Okay. Any further discussion? And then all those in favor of the turkey amendment, House File 1590. That could be interpreted a couple of ways, I suppose. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. 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 Opposed. Motion carried. We have another one by Representative Hackbarth, A16.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, you might see that the 1549 amendment in the packet, too, and we're withdrawing that one. That's not going to be...
Okay, 1549 is withdrawn. That won't be coming up.
The 816 replaced all that because we had made the technical changes to the amendment. I'll move the A16 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the motion is before us, if you'd explain the amendment.
I don't remember if it was last year or 2 years ago we made a change to bull hunt days regulations where for youth and for women, that when you're bull hunting, the draw weight is rated in pounds. We made a minimum of a 30-pound draw weight so we could accommodate youth and the women for hunting big game. But we left turkey hunting out. So it's just really a technical change to bring turkey hunting into the same area of law where the pull means for exceeding 30 pounds, and that actually lowers the draw weight. And that's all it really does, just technical change to bring turkey hunting into the same class as the big game.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Now we have an A16 amendment. I guess I had it in here in my packet. I guess I had it twice. So I had two of them. Okay. So I think that concludes the amendment. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then Representative Lagunias removes her or renews her motion that House File 3547, the second committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Tax. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, we legalized morning dove hunting. Do you know how much that hunting season raises for those pathetic little birds? Big men fighting those little birds, I mean, killing those how much does the department get out of that?
Representative Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd have to have Mr. Boggess come up, but I really don't think a morning dove is very pathetic, Mr. Chairman. They're actually beautiful, and they're one of the most sporting game birds that are taken in all of North America.
Anything on the in the bill dealing with morning dove?
No, there isn't.
Okay, any further discussion on the bill? We've got a long agenda.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
Representative Dill, can you take them with archery?
There's no prohibition against that. Representative Powell will probably be trying that in the future. No prohibition against
that. Okay, no further discussion. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Dill. And we now have Representative Hornstein. I know he was present earlier. There we are. Representative Ornstein, we're on House File 3800. Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, I move the Transportation Policy and Finance Division report for House File 3800, First Committee in Brooklyn.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Hornstein, what we usually do is take author's amendments if they would like to get the bill in the form that the author would like. I see I've got one here from you. Do you want to do that now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And
you're not on the committee, so the chair will move the amendment on your behalf then, and it's the one that's identified as, is that a B1? It's a handwritten amendment. The handwritten.
No, that's, mine is A29.
Oh, A29, okay. The A29 is the author's amendment.
Yes.
Okay, I was told that the B1 was an author's amendment as well. That
might be one that I was hoping you might do, Mr. Chair, but I mean, I could do it as well.
Okay, well, I would have to do it on your behalf. I'd be happy to do that. And the same would be true with the H3800A29, and that's an author's amendment. Any comments on the amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, you'll recall last year we had about 30 amendments, and I really made a real effort to pare all of that down. And so what we're doing here is we're deleting a number of sections at the request of the authors, except, you know, one of the sections was not done at the request of the author. It was done at the request of another committee chair. I can explain that. But these are all deletions requested by other authors of the bill.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion is carried. Then does this handwritten one also get it in the form that you would like?
Yes, it is.
Okay, the chair moves and the B1 the handwritten amendment. to get the bill in the form that the author would like. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Does that get the bill where you want to present?
Well, Mr. Chair, there actually is one more. It's an A-26.
A-26. We don't have that one.
Oh, okay. Well, then let's hold on that.
That'll be another author's amendment at the end, then. Or
the appropriate time.
We'll see where it is. Okay, why don't you explain the bill, then?
Okay.
Or I guess we need the motion to House File 3800, the first committee in Grossman, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill for 2008. You'll recall we have a 2007 bill, so this is not to be confused with that. That's a separate bill, House File 1351, and we're in conference committee on that today. So the new bill, similar to the old one, has a lot of provisions that were approved in the first in the Transportation and Transit Policy Subcommittee, and then later in the Transportation Finance Committee. I did want to let you know a little about the A-29 amendments. We had an Eakin provision deleted related to truck and trailer registration at his request. We had a financial provision that, again, was deleted for fiscal reasons. That was the B-1 amendment. That was moved by the chair related to a paratransit study. There were some expenses related to that. Representative Hilty had a driving after suspension provision that was deleted. And I did want to talk briefly about another deletion, which was a Representative Medora provision, and that relates to the expansion of the transit taxing district. This was policy that was agreed to in the Transportation Committee, but was removed at the request of the Tax Committee Chair because it is a tax issue and it belongs more in that committee. So she requested that we do not include this in the Transportation Policy Bill. So that was really more of a procedural issue. There will be a separate hearing and conversation in the Tax Committee about that particular provision. So I just really wanted to emphasize that that was not deleted because of policy. It was not deleted at the author's request, and you know, that will be dealt with in the Tax Committee. So with that, Mr. Chair, you know, I think the provisions are straightforward. We have in Article 1, a motor carrier regulation. None of these are particularly controversial. There are a couple that have some controversy that I'll highlight. Mullery provision. We have your provision, Mr. Chair, around disability plate restrictions. We have Representative Dill, some more accounting on provisional driver's license logbooks and training hours. Speaker Kelleher has engine braking provision for I-94. Representative Norton has a graduated driver's license, and of course that's always generated interest in the House. That is actually included. Representative Winkler has project prioritization legislation, which is there are some concerns about that, and we're working through that with MnDOT. Representative Nelson, number exemptions provisions. The transit needs report was in from Representative Medora, but that's now been deleted. I mean, I could continue to go through these. There's a lot of them, Mr. Chair. Again, I'll just highlight the controversial ones. Representative Morrow has a deputy commissioner appointment. Again, that's we're in conversation with MnDOT about that, trying to address their needs. I have a text messaging prohibition. Again, that's not to be confused with a complete ban on cell phone use, but it's related to just a ban on text messaging. I also have the impounded vehicle and towing content removal. That's been somewhat controversial. That's included.
And let's see. Representative Kalin has some reporting provisions related to the urban partnership agreement. That has also, there's some concerns that MnDOT has expressed about that, and we're also working through that as well. I have met with MnDOT yesterday about these provisions that they have concerns about, and we do have a plan to try to address those. So at this point, I don't see any provisions that should cause too much concern at this point, and would ask for your support.
Okay, Representative Hornstein, that other author's amendment, I think, is now been distributed.
Okay.
I have it here at any rate. It's the A26.
Okay, Mr. Chair, the A26 was just handed to me today. This is Representative Dill, and I believe that the DNR is okay with this. It has to do with some of the licensing issues around watercraft, my understanding. I will not pretend to be an expert on this particular issue, but my understanding is that the DNR is okay with this provision.
Maybe we should have them quickly comment, and I'm not an expert on it. Representative Fulbert, you were going to say something?
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, what Fulbert this does is there are some watercraft who are not required to have a title. I think it's smaller boats under a certain foot, and this one seems to recommend that it's required to have a title, so it'd be for the larger boats that are required.
Article 1.
It separates out the small boats that don't have to have a title and the large boats. It's a clarification in the law, I think, is what it does.
Okay. Chair moves in the A26 amendment to put it before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Leader, I've got one here with your name on it. It's the A25.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the amendment to A25.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this is actually a cleanup from the transportation finance bill that was overridden. The department requested it cleans up some language that makes it consistent, really doesn't change anything, but what it does is indicate how they can convert the natural gas fee from the existing fee because of a change, and this clears up the language a little bit if you look at that, and it changes the effective date.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Representative Mahoney? I think Representative Foltz had his hand up. Representative Foltz?
Mr. Chair, maybe for Representative Leader or for staff, I see that we're changing the rate for compressed natural gas, and it appears as though we're increasing it. What's the revenue impact of this amendment if it goes on?
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, and Representative Coles, in the bill that was passed, it was a typo in the original bill that was passed. This does not change the rate, but it was when you make the conversion to increase the gas tax or the tax, it was a conversion factor. And actually, if you look at it, it was in the bill as 1.19. It should have been 1.9, and it's converted up to the equivalent what we raised the gasoline tax, and that's basically because it was a typo in the original bill.
Representative Coles, I'm informed by staff that we actually passed this as a separate bill in this committee a while back. But it looks like most of the transportation policy stuff is going to be carried in this one. Is that
correct? Mr. Chair, again, and it's a conversion rate correction from the original transportation finance bill. It doesn't increase or decrease anything, but it was just because of the typo in it.
Okay, Representative Grapple.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Leader, the appropriation on the bottom that does not expire and may not be canceled, I guess I don't remember this bill coming through the committee, so I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, but
Representative Leader
may not be. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, and I think it was Representative Garofalo, that makes it consistent with the rest of the tax in the bill. Otherwise, I could have Mr. Burris explain it for the department, but basically this makes everything, the new tax equivalent to the old tax, the same requirements is basically what this amendment does. It cleans it up.
Mr. Chairman, if we could just have Mr. Burris, I know we have a long agenda today, but if we just really briefly, just so I can understand what that does, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, if you could identify yourself for the record, here's the question.
Mr. Chair and members, Matt Burris with House Research. The provision Representative Garofalo is asking about starting on page 1, line 24, this is a modification to the trunk highway bonding provision that was in the transportation finance bill. And the way the trunk highway bonds were set up was authorizing the bonds over a series of fiscal years. What this language does is clarify that there's not a bond cancellation that happens before the actual fiscal year authorization. Because the bonds are set up to be authorized over the course of 10 fiscal years, under current law, the Department of Finance would likely put a cancellation, add some of the bonds to its cancellation report before the department would actually be authorized to use the bonds. So this clarifies that the department would be able to use those issue bonds and use those funds longer than the normal 4-year limit on bond cancellation.
Mr. Chairman? Into the testifier. So this impacts the bonding, and does it affect the implementation of the gas tax surcharge for the bonding? Does it have any impact? In other words, if we don't pass this legislation, does it have any impact on the revenue side of things that it would or would not be able to do anything?
Mr. Chair, members, I think there would be a potential impact. I would need to confer with fiscal staff a little bit, but offhand, I think it would be likely that if this legislation weren't passed, down the road, there would be a cancellation of some of the bond authorization, and that would affect the amount of the gas tax surcharge that is implemented based on the amount of bonds that are let in the transportation finance bill. So there is that possibility, I think.
Again, Mr. Chairman, and I guess Representative Leader, this was just an oversight in the original legislation. We're not taking a second bite at the apple here. This is just we're enacting the gas tax increase. The legislature is enacting the gas tax increase it meant to enact the first time.
Representative Leader,
I think you.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. There's nothing changes other than cleaning it up. Is that what you asked?
No, but I think I figured out what it was. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it.
Okay, Representative Lankowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, maybe some clarification here. This bill did pass this committee already. It was a technical provision, and I stated then that I thought it probably did not need to go to taxes. After reviewing it further, I re-referred it from the floor to the tax committee so we could look. And after reviewing it with staff, there is no tax impact. It is purely a technical change that was intended by the omnibus transportation bill. So basically, if you supported the omnibus transportation bill, you would want to support this now. If you did not, you would probably want to oppose this now. But it's just a really a technical oversight from the original transportation bill.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Lou Covina has the next amendment, and it's A23.
Yeah, I'll move the amendment.
Representative Rukavina moves the amendment, H3800A23. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and I've talked to Representative Hornstein and Representative Leader about this. I believe there's a Duluth News Tribune article I asked pages to pass out, which is coming around now, but basically here's what the amendment does. I have a constituent who bid on a cooperative road project in Duluth between the city of Duluth, St. Louis County, and the Department of Transportation. Well, after the bid was done and, you know, it was awarded, actually, it was found that Duluth had an ordinance requiring a setback. And because of the setback, they would have eaten up a lot of Target's parking lot where this frontage road was going. So, as you can see in the article, Duluth had to, because of its, you know, I suppose, city statutes, they had to have first a meeting of their planning and zoning to rescind that ordinance for that area. Then they have to have a council meeting and read it there. And the other council meeting is coming up, I believe, sometime in the middle of this month. Well, the Department of Transportation got nervous because of this waiting for this ordinance, so they canceled the bid. So now everybody knows what the contractor that is asking me to do this, who lives in my district, what she bid on the project. And I think it's totally unfair, and so the amendment just says that in this particular case, it's written specific enough that that they're going to get awarded the bid that they initially got awarded, but then it got rejected. And so I'd appreciate your support, and I don't, I'll be perfectly upfront, I don't have the support of the Department of Transportation, but I'd like them to come and explain it, because when they came to my office, their whole explanation was completely illogical to me. So, if they want to post this, they can come up and explain their illogical opposition.
Mr. Chair, I would leave this to, you know, the discussion of the committee. I you know, MnDOT has some concerns, but, you know, we have a member also that's trying to address the local issue. So, I really don't have a strong preference one way or the other, but I think MnDOT does have significant concerns, and I think that they should, you know, explain.
Well, we'll recognize them. I'm just looking for comments from the author at this point. So, if the department wants to answer the question posed by Representative Rukavina, then I think the question is basically why the concerns.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. I know that the situation has caused a lot of difficulty for Representative Rukavina's constituents. And unfortunately, we're in a difficult position with this bid. We did put the project out for bid. We did get bids on it. It was not awarded. Inadvertently, the Office of Civil Rights, which has responsibility for determining whether the DBE requirements are met, sent out a letter earlier than they should have after they had determined that this company that was the apparent low bidder had complied with the DBE requirements for the contract, saying that it had been awarded. In fact, it had not been awarded, and it is the function of the Office of Construction in MnDOT to determine whether a project is actually awarded and to make that notice. The company was informed that the letter had been sent in error and that the project had not been awarded. The reason the contract was not awarded was because after the bids were opened, it was determined that it could not be constructed in compliance with ordinances of the city of Duluth. And it is a three-party contract involving the city, the county of St. Louis, and the state. And there were some other things about the contract that were determined that needed to be changed at that point. And since then, the contract or the project plans have been changed. A number of revisions have been made. It is extremely likely that when the project is put out for bid on June 6th, that the bids will be different than they were the first time because the work is different. Because we were unable to get the project started this spring and it will be delayed until the fall, it adds an additional half year to the construction schedule, which in itself means that the bids will be different this time because the project is going to take longer. And so I recognize that the company that had the apparent low bid is in a very difficult situation, but we are now in a difficult situation as well because we're not sure what would happen. We have this on a letting schedule to open bids on June 6th, and now that the project is different, if we are required by law to give the contract to the apparent low bidder, we will be negotiating change orders and supplemental agreements and trying to figure out how the plan that the bids were opened under the first time fits with that bid. So it's a difficult situation.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Covina.
Well, in fact, there was a letter sent to this company saying that they were awarded the contract, and maybe, you know, the Office of Construction, you know, kind of sounds like the KGB, and I should be supporting you because of my political affiliation on this whole Kremlin attitude of the Department of Transportation, but, you know, it's unbelievable that these bureaucrats can screw up and, you know, the person has to suffer, but if they screw up, boy, bang, people are on them right away. I just want to read the facts I got yesterday from Ms. Harley Abramson, who's in, by the way, just had her second back surgery and has to worry about this besides. But she said to me, I want to get back to you to clarify things regarding the Duluth Trunk Highway 53 project. Upon receiving the facts stating the rejecting of our bid, I left a message with Ms. Warling from the MDOT central office. She returned my call the following morning, and I was told that their office had nothing to do with the rejection letter, that District 1 was in charge. So I phoned Mike Robinson, who Mike is the head of the District 1 up there, a good guy, who in turn had Mike Tardy call me, and he expressed his feeling. He said the project did not be handled in such a manner, but and I told him there was a simple solution to the problem because you were worried about this delay and the fact, and that's what the problem was. It is not, and tell me, Ms. Parker, if this is an incorrect statement on her part. It is not uncommon practice to delay or extend the starting date on a project on projects because of permit or other issues that occur. KGM and other contractors see this quite frequently. Is that a true statement or not,
Ms. Parker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rusavina, I'm sure that it happens sometimes, but we award between 180 and 200 contracts a year. I could check with our construction office and find out how often it happens, but I don't know right now.
So, members, it does happen. Mr. Chair, thank you. You know, members, again, this was a mistake on the part of the Department of Transportation, and I see no reason why the bids can't be awarded. And Ms. Abrams has said that, and has explained to the state that she would not hold anyone liable for a delay in the project or for changes needed in the project. So, you know, again, she was the low bidder. It wasn't her fault that there was this. And by the way, members, the city of Duluth and the county have no problem with this amendment. I talked to Mayor Ness, Representative Gatos, and the county commissioner whose district this is in Duluth, Mr. Fink, and they don't have any problem with this. So, you know, I hope that the members of the committee support me on this because this is not going to cause any problem for the Department of Transportation, and she was the low bidder, and it's only fair that it should be awarded and continue.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We now have one more amendment that Representative Garofalo, the amendment that you have deals with two sections that were already removed from the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, out of respect for the highly respected chairman of the Transit Policy Committee, I'll withdraw that amendment and just thank the chairman for his work on the matter.
Okay, the bill then is before us as amended.
Sure.
You got several hands up. I think I saw Representative Mahoney first. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm trying to formulate my question here. Representative Hornstein, on page 35, you've got language that deals with provisional licenses. And it's putting restrictions on provisional licenses. And one of the a variety of the restrictions, and I'm looking at page 35, starting on line 11, where it says driving between the license holder's home and place of employment, license holder's home and school, and driving for purposes of employment or accompanied by a driver at least 25 years of age. Has the law enforcement, have they had their say on this? Because I can't imagine a police officer at 1 o'clock in the morning trying to check and see if a 16 and a half or 17 year old, well, up to age 18, is going to and from work or to and from home. I mean, how do they know that? How are, have they come to your committee and explained how they're going to be able to determine that?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mahoney, I have not had communication with law enforcement about it. Ms. Weinholzer is here from AAA. I don't know if she would want to comment on your question. If they have had conversations, I think it's a good question. Better get a response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have an oral amendment, if I could.
Okay. You could tell the committee what the amendment is.
The oral amendment is to delete Article 1, Sections 1 and 2, having to do with the mandated school bus criteria, school bus driver's criteria. I'm sorry.
If you could give us that again, so members of the committee are sure to have it, page number and then section number.
Mr. Chair, I guess a point of order here. Are we still on another question? I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you've got the floor, and you're the only other hand that I saw.
Okay.
But we need the
page one. That'll be page
Chair?
One.
Mr. Chair, I thought we were going to have testimony from on my particular question.
Thank you.
Okay.
I apologize, Mr. Chair. I'll hold my amendment here.
Yeah, I misunderstood that, then. I thought that, okay, Rep. Mahoney, you state your question then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you could tell me, has the law enforcement community weighed in on these provisional changes to provisional licenses and how they might determine if the license holder is going from home to place of employment or school to...
And if you could identify yourself in the record. I thought that Representative Hornstein had responded.
Hi, I'm Gail Weinholzer, Director of Public Affairs for AAA. We've been leading the effort on the graduated driver's licensing legislation. We have showed this legislation to the Police Chiefs Association, Sheriff's Association, and the Police and Peace Officers Association. They have not expressed anything other than support for graduated driver's licensing. They've not expressed any opposition to the provisions in this bill. The only provision that they've ever expressed any opposition to was the parental permission slip that would allow teenagers to not participate in this legislation.
Mr. Chair, thank you. If I might ask a question of Representative Cornish, if you're a police officer stopping a kid, is it difficult to ascertain whether they're driving to work or home or school or home?
Is it difficult to
just... Representative Cornish.
If they're coming from the party, I mean, I have no idea where they're coming from. I'd like to know the answer.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions?
Mr. Chair, to this point, on page 35, line 35.15, to the witness or somebody, there's a change in graduated license provisions where it says that a driver has to be at least 25 years of age. In order to be a company. I mean, that's my grandpa almost.
Where did it come from?
And where did that come from? And is that something that is, I mean, we might as well say that you don't get a driver's license until 25, then we'll have to be safe. First of all, I'll tell you, I'm not a supporter, never have been, of a graduated driver's license. We had a graduated driver's license in our home called my wife and I.
Right.
We constructed, we did it. And our kids knew it. I'm sure they violated it as well, but because kids do that, but they also knew what the consequences would be. But I'm really concerned about line 35.15, and maybe the witness from AAA can ask where that comes from.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair?
I'm hearing a voice, but I...
Walker. Thank you, Mr. Chair. While she's coming back to the table, Representative Silbert, that was the same issue that I brought to AAA. I mean, think about it. At 25, we have individuals that could be out of law school or graduate school.
Yeah.
At 24, so at 22, you graduate from college, and you can't take around your 16-year-old little brother driving. I think it is excessive.
Mr. Chair? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it's just a way of reading it that may be poorly written, but I read it as it's accompanied by a licensed driver. The licensed driver is 25 years of age. So if you're 16, you have to be with someone who's 25.
Hey,
that's
Chair.
Different, I believe, than what you're saying. If I'm understanding correctly.
Let's go one at a time. Were you posing that question to...
I'm trying to clarify the language, I guess, in the bill as far as... If I'm reading it correctly, or...
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poppy, you are reading it correctly. So at 16, you can't be with a licensed driver who's 22, who just graduated college. You have to be with somebody that's 25.
Okay, Representative Hornstein, did you have any thoughts on that, or maybe we should just have the person from AAA testify?
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, if it would make the... This is Representative Norton's provision, and she's worked closely with safety advocates. But, you know, as the author of the bill, I would say that if it's a concern for the committee and the 21, we could lower it from 25 to 21. You know, I haven't talked with Representative Norton, but, you know, if that provides some comfort, I would certainly accept an oral. I would propose an oral amendment.
I'll just relate a personal thought on this. So when we get up to 25 or even maybe 21 or 2, when I graduated college, I was in that age. I was a certified driver's ed instructor. I had three younger sisters that were at that point just learning to drive, and I think under this language, as even a certified driver's ed instructor, I would have been against the law. So I think we need to be a little more reasonable in how we approach this. I think we understand the intent, and I basically support the overall intent. But when we start getting on into 20-some years of age, quite frankly, I'm not even sure when I was getting certified then as a... we did a form of almost like practice teaching when I was in college to get the certification, and we worked with high school students as a part of our learning how to teach driver's education. Now, we were under the general supervision of the college instructor, but he wasn't necessarily in the car. So I think there's some issues here that maybe need to be resolved, and Representative Hornstein, you're hearing the discussion, and do you have a suggestion?
Well, Mr. Chair, I hear the concerns, Mr. Chair, and I guess I would just then, on page 35, line 15, move an author's oral amendment to change the number 25 to the number 21. But actually, someone else has to move it.
I understand that, but that's a suggested author's amendment.
Suggested author's
Okay, do we have a motion to do that?
Well, you know, Mr. Chair, you know, I'm looking at this whole thing, and I'd like to make a motion maybe to just delete the whole new language from 35.1 to 35.15. And, you know, up at the top now, and I don't know what the current status is of a graduated driver's license, because I, you know, kind of put the binders on and the earplugs in when this was passed by then Representative Dr. Chaudhry a number of years back. But
We also have an age up on line 35.2, now 20 years of age. So, you know, I've said before, and I see Representative Commander Urquhart on the audience, I suppose. I wonder if the statute of limitations is up, but, you know, my kids were driving cars when they were like 12 years old, because that's the way it kind of is out in the country and probably in other places too. And my daughter and son are both excellent drivers, and I should bring up Auntie Gloria too, because Auntie Gloria hasn't been brought up in a number of years, but, you know, I just saw Auntie Gloria the other day. When Auntie Gloria was driving the car at 12 years old Marino Gelsomini's car, going to Flex Grocery Store to buy cigarettes, and Quinto Aluni, the chief captain on the police force, would say, "Okay, Gloria, you go home right now after you buy Marino his cigarettes." Well, today, Gloria would be a double felon. So, you know, I mean, it's just getting out of hand. But, you know, my daughter would drive my son to ski tournaments, and they'd leave probably right around 5 in the morning to get up to Giant's Ridge. And if the neighbor's kid now was in the car, it'd be against the law, mm-hmm. You know? It's just to the point where I don't want to make the motion. Maybe somebody else should make it.
Actually, I would like to make the motion that Representative Hornstein suggested that we change the age from what is in the proposed in the bill to 21.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the Wagenius motion on page 35, line 15, that 25 be struck and 21 be inserted. Now, any discussion on the motion? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make an amendment to the amendment and change the 21 to 20 so it matches the age at the top.
Two ways we could approach that. Representative Wagenius, would you want to stay with 21 or incorporate his idea at 20?
I think I would defer to the author of the bill on that, Representative Hornstein.
Okay. Representative Hornstein,
just 1 second.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was dealing with something else. That's fine with me as the author.
That's not like any of us incorporates or changes or amendments then to 20 from 21. Okay, any further discussion on the amendments then to go with 20? Perhaps some Ruth Levine, I think you had your hand up.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was going to bring up line 920.
Okay. Any further discussion?
If we vote for this, then can we still vote to delete both?
Sure.
Representative Rubina, you said you didn't want to do that, but Representative Westrum, why are you thinking about it?
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe staff could help me. Is there a way to amend this amendment and just delete the whole section?
All right, now we have an amendment before us. We would have to take care of that amendment and then... the bill is back before us for further amendments.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is in the right direction, but it's like a baby step towards a marathon. I guess I would let's vote on this then, and then let's just the next amendment. I or somebody will have will be to delete Section 50. Representative Rukavina is right. Why don't we just say don't get a driver's license till age 35, because that's when you can run for president too. So maybe we could be consistent. When you're able to run for president, you can get your license
And lower the drinking age.
Okay, let's before we get too heavily into a future amendment to take care of this one. Any further discussion on changing it from 25 to 20? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I'll move this amendment that Representative Rukavina priorly talked about. Move to delete Section 50.
Can I second that?
not required, but the motion is before us, and that section begins on page 34, beginning on line 21, and goes through page 35, line 21. So if everybody follows where that is in the bill. Okay, Representative Westrom makes the motion. Any discussion? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Rukavina brought up a valid point of who can bring who to the ski hill or the swimming lessons or, you know, you name it. And then there's another question in here, immediate family. Who's going to start determining that? The law enforcement officer is going to start questioning. Representative Hornstein, what's going to establish probable cause for the officers? They're going to just start pulling people over and checking to see, well, are you three related or part of the immediate family, I believe is the language in there. Representative Hornstein, let me give you an example. I don't know if you've got immediate family defined in here, but let me give you an example of a case that I worked on a couple years ago relating to tenants. And a city ordinance says no more than three unrelated tenants can occupy the property. Now, I think most people would say two brothers are related. But you know what the city's position on that was? Well, being the one brother wasn't dependent on the other brother, they weren't related anymore for the determination of being related. Therefore, two brothers and two of their friends couldn't live together in the same facility. Now, I think most people here would think two brothers are related, whether one is dependent financially on the other one or not. But that was their definition. They couldn't provide it in their definition, but that's how they decided they were going to interpret it. This was a local unit of government. So now you define to me what immediate family is going to be, and I just think we have all kinds of problems with this kind of overreaching legislation. And you know what? The older we let people start learning, the less they're ready to learn. So Representative Rukavina is right. Out on the farm, out in the country, kids are driving lawnmowers, they're driving pickups, they're driving to the field, through the field. They're getting some valuable experience, and now you want to wait until they're 17, 18, who knows what it'll be next. But as you get older, you don't want to learn as much as when you're younger. And so you know that, I think most people know that, as being kids themselves, or having your own kids. You don't wait till they're 18 to start teaching them wrong and right. You don't wait forever to start training them, because they're then gone. They're gone from the nest at age 18 in a lot of cases. So, members, I would encourage you to vote for this.
We have several people in this do have questions. Representative Clark?
Well, I'm sorry to hear from the proponents of the bill. I know that when this was being debated, there's a lot of information about the reason for the bill, and so I'd like to hear that.
You're talking about AAA?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you'd like to briefly answer that question.
Absolutely. I'm Gail Weinelfer again, Director of Public Affairs for AAA. I'm here on behalf of AAA, the Minnesota Safety Council, and numerous organizations. And I just want to highlight a few of the most pertinent reasons behind this bill. One, I'm sure most, if not all of you, saw in the Star Tribune that Minnesota has the highest death rate in the nation for teens. No other state has a higher rate. Secondly, we are one of four states in the nation that have neither a nighttime nor a passenger provision. 46 other states have figured out how to make this work, and those that have reduced their teen fatality rates by up to 40%. The teen fatality rate is not only the number one fatality rate in the nation for teens, but in Minnesota, it is the largest cause of death. And that includes the other four reasons all combined: homicide, gangs, drugs, suicide. We kill more teens in crashes than we kill in any other of the four major categories combined.
I do understand the experience argument, and what we are not doing is trying to take away experience and learning from teens. What we're trying to do is do it in a controlled environment with an older driver in the vehicle, a parent, an older brother or sister, something of that nature, to give them the experience they need, but in a controlled environment. With each teen you put into a vehicle, it increases the crash rate by almost 100%. That's what we're trying. We're not trying to keep them from being behind the wheel. We're trying to keep them from loading the car so that it ends up being a clown vehicle. I've got a neighbor who, every time the 16-year-old pulls up in the car, far more kids come tumbling out of that car than they could possibly be dealing with in a reasonable and mature manner, let alone a seatbelt issue above and beyond that. We're talking about a short-term provision. It's 6 months. In fact, if you compare, as I mentioned, we're one of four states that have neither a nighttime nor a passenger provision. If you compare this legislation to the other 46 states, this is really milquetoast. Most of the other states start their nighttime restrictions at 9 or 10 o'clock. Most of the other states have a year-long restriction instead of 6 months. We have tried very hard over the last few years to work with legislators concerned to adopt changes that make it more palatable, and I would hope that you would support this legislation, because it's great to be number one in Minnesota and education and all those fine things, but when we're leading the nation and killing our teens, I don't think that's a category we want to continue to lead.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wanted to make sure I understood where the author of the bill is on the idea of deleting Section 50.
We always ask that question before we vote, but if you want to ask it now, that's fine.
I wanted to make sure that I had a very clear understanding from the chair whether he thinks it's a good idea or he thinks it's a bad idea to delete that particular section.
Mr. Chair, I strongly support Representative Norton's legislation, and you know, I am also reflecting, I think, the Transportation Committee's opinion on this. So I would personally oppose this amendment, the Western Amendment.
Okay, and we have a couple of other people who want to comment. Representative Kamer, or ask the question.
Mr. Chair, the witness basically.
Okay, and Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm going to speak against the motion. I am glad to hear the testimony, and I would have made some of those points. I would just ask members to think about when you are driving behind teen drivers, and we once all were one, and so we all know we thought we were great drivers, and we all know now that we actually weren't. Do you feel more anxiety when you're behind a teen driver alone in the car, or a car of 16 teens in the car? And as a parent of someone who just got a license, someone who's trying to, and two more coming behind, nothing strikes terror more in my heart than the car full of kids with all the cell phones and all the distractions. And I think there's a legitimate reason for teen drivers to spend time in a controlled environment behind that wheel so they really get some experience.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill was before the Transportation Committee, and my bill, House File 1601, which was introduced last year, was also there, and basically the two bills were put on hold because there was controversy. It basically split down the middle in transportation on some of the provisions that I have in my bill regarding the allowance of parents to have some kind of a say in being able to put on their driver's license the ability for a teen, if they were working, especially if they were in high school, being able to get back and forth after a special time at night to be able to. And we have the capability with our license now to put on there whether we are donors for organs or things like that if we're in an accident ourselves. And we can also put on the driver's license information. And there was nothing disputed in committee that said they couldn't do that. So the divisiveness of the thing was that the AAA didn't want to have anything to do with parents, have any say in what happened with their children, especially if they were working or being able to be with other family members, and it's been a major issue for quite a few years regarding this. And Mr. Chairman, I would oppose, I would support the amendment as brought forward by Representative Westrum, and oppose the way the language is written in the bill.
The hand keeps going up, and I would just ask members if your point has been made. We've got a long agenda today. I think people are getting a pretty good understanding of the pros and cons. Those of you that are on the list, if you could be very, very brief, so we can move down the agenda. Representative Yarrow.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. I think that the offer of the AAA and all the safety council people have been more than accommodating. There is an epidemic. Not only cell phone use or abuse and text messaging even is much worse, cause more accidents than DWI. Tom, when your Aunt Gloria drove, you know, there was hardly anybody driving. My grandfather died 3 years before I came here. I never met him. He left for the United States as an economic immigrant when my mother was three, and she didn't see him again either. He got his license for 25 cents, never had to study anything, pass a test or anything. Things have changed. We have to work on prevention. And I'm disappointed that this bill doesn't contain the cell phone. I thank the Representative Chairman Ornstein for hearing the bill, because this is the first time in about 10 years that the bill was heard. It passed the committee in the Senate once. But if we don't do this, I'll offer an amendment on the floor so more people have a chance to vote on it. I wasn't ready on this. But it's an epidemic. Young kids are driving, and of course that's fine, and dying. We have an employee here whose only daughter was killed a couple of days before Christmas because she was using the cell phone. And it has broken the... Anyway, it's not only financial, but the emotional and moral aspect of the whole thing.
Representative Clark.
Chairman, I was just going to point out to Representative Anderson that each of his concerns is handled in the bill, and so, you know, you should look at that on page 35. It does say that it does not apply for the hours of... the later hours, if the person is driving between their home and a place of employment or a school event, whether for which is not transportation, for employment purposes, and so on. So I just, you know, your concerns have already been met in this bill. And I did want to just also clarify one other thing from the proponents. This does not apply to people driving out in their fields, kids learning to drive by driving in the fields, or anything like that, as far as I know. We're talking about driving on public highways, and I'd just like to have a clarification from the one of the proponents.
Mr. Chair, I believe that what Representative Clark is saying is accurate, but there's a lot of holes.
Gail Weinholzer with AAA again. It does not apply to any field work or anything of that nature. It does not affect the farm permit. All we're talking about is public roads, and there's one point that I skipped. That I should have mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of folks that consider this a parental rights issue. There has been some talk about having a parental permission slip to not obey the law, which I think is a terrible idea. And law enforcement joins me in opposition to a parental permission slip to break the law. But the other thing I'd point out, not only do teens have the highest death rate in Minnesota than any other state in the nation, but two-thirds of the people they're killing are the rest of us. So that's what makes it a societal issue, that's what makes it a transportation issue, and that's what makes it more than a parental issue.
Yeah, I think most of the points have been made. I think we understand the issue quite well. I'm just trying to get through the list of people so we can move down the agenda. Representative Westrom, very briefly.
Well, Mr. Chair, when you bring controversial things like this and then try to rush them through, I take a little offense to that, but I'll try to be brief. I've got two questions at least. Ms. Weinholzer or Representative Hornstein, can you answer to me what is the definition of immediate family?
Representative Weston, Chair Carlson, we've had this conversation. In fact, I've had it multiple times with Representative Norton following the Transportation Committee hearing in which this issue is brought up. And I think what we've agreed upon and would willingly accept as an amendment, as a clarification, would be any family member that's related by blood, adoption, or marriage.
So, Mr. Chair, to that, so second cousins, grandparents, first cousins, that would all be what you would view as immediate family?
That's correct.
Well, I don't think the bill clarifies that. wine holder. Mr. Chair, so members, I think we got another issue. That issue alone we need to get clarified. Secondly, a person age 20, if they hold a Minnesota ID card, are they going to be qualified for the person to be driving with, or do they have to be a licensed driver?
Under the verbiage of this bill, it is licensed driver.
So, Mr. Chair, when my girls turn age 16, I will not be a qualified person to ride with them and let them drive. Members, I urge you to vote yes on this amendment.
Hey, just relative to the comments and rushing things through Representative Westrom, there are already 15 people that have spoken to it. You've spoken twice. This is not being rushed through. We're having a good discussion. I'm just reminding people. So when you take offense, when we've had 15 people and you've spoken...
Mr. Chair, this is the first committee I've had that I've had a chance to...
Representative Cole, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will try to be brief. Ms. Weinholzer, I appreciate your clarification on immediate family. I think that is important. That was one of the questions I raised in the previous committee. I think that, however, Representative Anderson's point about not necessarily the parental permission slip, but I know there are other alternatives being considered, an endorsement on the license system, is an issue that's still out there that I think needs to be... I'm actually going to, despite my libertarian... leanings. I'm going to oppose the amendment today because I think that this is an important provision that still needs some work, and I don't want to see it go away yet. But I think that if we don't deal with this ability of parents to parent their kids, I may very well vote in support of taking this out on the floor, and I may be working on an amendment to deal with that issue. I think that there is a way to allow parents to be parents if they want to. Allow their 16-year-olds to have additional privileges, but I'm generally supportive of the idea that that this provisional driver's license has. So I'm actually opposing the amendment. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Ms. Weinholzer, you mentioned something about a parental slip or something of acknowledgement that a parent is a consent for a teenager to be driving, and you said something about breaking the law. Why would, if we put that into law, made it available, would that be against the law?
I may have unfortunately misspoken. What AAA and law enforcement, both the sheriff and the police chiefs, have spoken of is that what we would like is a law that has consistency. And I agree with Representative Coles. There are a lot of good parents out there that instill a lot of requirements or restrictions within their own families. Unfortunately, there are many parents who don't. And again, those teenagers are on the roadways with the rest of us, and the two-thirds of the folks that they're killing are other people. When the discussion of exemptions under the graduated driver's license system has come up, AAA and law enforcement have been consistently in opposition to exemptions that would be outside of the parameters of this current legislation.
Well, Mr. Chair and Ms. Weinholzer, I'm disappointed that you don't trust parents to be able to put down on and have it put it. If we put it in the law, disappointed that you're saying parents don't have the wherewithal to be able to make a judgment on behalf of their children.
Okay, any further discussion?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And just something has not been brought up. There's a lot of employers out there, for example, myself, that hire a lot of 16, 17-year-old kids that work at my restaurant. And we have a number of different shifts. And it's going to really be a burden to them. I don't care if they work at McDonald's or Burger King or where not all. And I think when you look at the bill itself, it's really going to put some restrictions on it, as well as for the kids coming home from athletic events at 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock at night, they can call the parents to come get them. I really have some serious reservations with it.
Any further discussion on the amendment, Representative Hornsky? We usually give the author a chance. You did indicate that you prefer that the amendment
stand. Yes, just to Representative Hyde-Griffin's comment, I believe his concerns are addressed in line 11 on page 35. But, really great discussion, members, and you know, I always learn a lot, and I you know, appreciate both sides. But again, I would urge opposition to the Wedgeham Amendment.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor of Representative Westrom's motion to strike Section 50 from the bill, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion defeated.
Division.
Division has been requested. All those in favor, raise your hand. Okay, being 9 yeses and 18 noes, the motion is defeated. It's my understanding, Representative Hornstein, that the handwritten amendment B1, you'd like that to be reconsidered?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Apparently there was some miscommunication maybe between fiscal staff and MnDOT about this, is my understanding, and apparently there is no, my understanding is there's no financial impact. I don't know if MnDOT wants to.
So that's been resolved, maybe being that that's
my understanding.
The amendment.
Yeah.
Let's, to make sure it's before us, I think I was the one that moved this particular amendment. So the chair moves the B1 amendment, the handwritten amendment that was adopted earlier, be reconsidered. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The amendment now is back before us, and Representative Hornstein, you'd like them to clarify the misunderstanding about cost.
I don't know if Mr. Gottfried is here. I think he would be the staff person involved in implementing this. So,
you can be brief, Mr. Gottfried, and just explain whether it has a cost implication or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Yeah, so there was just a misunderstanding of the date in which the implementation of the original bill would have required some additional funding for this year. The amendment allows the date to change, that the report out would be February of 2010, which will allow us the opportunity to put it into our regular planning process and fund it that way. No fiscal impact.
Okay, very good.
Sure. Just a question, does the fiscal note that we have in front of us reflect that understanding?
The fiscal note was based on the language that the date that we would have to report out would have been January or February of 2009, meaning that the planning effort would have to be occurring as we speak, or pretty soon thereafter after funding. And that's where it was identified, the $250,000 to run that kind of planning. We can absorb that into our normal planning process given a longer time frame. For example, the February report out in 2010 allows us to put this into our planning process and our fund, how we would fund that in 2009.
Mr. Chair, then we'll probably have to have an updated fiscal note before this proceeds.
You can provide that?
We can.
Okay. Any further discussion then on... we don't need any further. I just simply withdraw the amendment that's before us, so we are through with that. Okay, Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, members, if you could all turn to page 44, line 44-15, I think it covers. If the this is a far-reaching change in law, and it's poorly written here, and I know what they're getting at, but for some legislative history on this, the commercial vehicle inspectors and people who inspect the vehicles trucks, the legislature has specifically kept law enforcement powers away from them. The Citizens Association and others have lobbied against more authority for these people as far as peace officers. This section here, subdivision 2,
I think I'm going to make an amendment to the Sprite subdivision 2.
Section 68.
Section 68.
Page?
And renumber the
44.
44. Page 44, section 68. And the reason for this is, if you look at the wording, first of all, in 44.17, it says police officers. It really should say peace officers. Police officers is an old term, no longer used in the description of peace officers. Secondly, when you look down at this, on 44.29, this would allow them conducting inspections at designated highway way stations. In the past, we specifically kept peace officer authority away from these folks that inspect the trucks, and they have to have the assistance of a licensed person. This is not only a union issue, it's a safety issue, it's a training issue. Historically, we kept the powers away from these people. And I talked with a member of the patrol just before this, and he told me that it's related to just these certain orders. But the way it's written, it's vague, it's got the wrong terminology, it opens it up to, Representative Goldberg and Representative Rubin. I know they've been interested in truck inspections before, and this would allow somebody to peace officer authority under some. And you can't just grant somebody police officer power. They have to be trained and have to get a degree and go through law enforcement and get the full license. So I'm just, unless they have an explanation why this is in here, changing legislative history and conferring all these powers on these people, I would like to strike this thing.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the motion to strike section 68, page 44, lines 44.14 through 44.30? Advice from the author of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is a provision that comes from the Department of Public Safety, and Ms. McCormick is here, and maybe could speak to it. I'm trying to research who the House author of the provision is, but I know that perhaps Ms. McCormick can, from Driver Vehicle Services, can talk about this.
Ms. McCormick?
Okay. It's actually Representative Madore's provision.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And these provisions have to do with the Driver and Vehicle Services coming into compliance after our CDL audit in August of this year with several federal regulations. And I discussed this change with Representative Cornish, brought it to our attention. I discussed it with the State Patrol, and we would be comfortable with this change. And I've also talked with Representative Madore about it.
Okay, any further discussion and on the Cornish amendment?
Mr. Chair, through the witness, is the enforcement only take place at the designated truck weigh station?
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, State Patrol and vehicle inspection operators, I'm fairly sure that they can also deal with trucks on roadside, but I'm looking at to Captain Urquhart to come down and talk to that provision.
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand the State Patrol can do that outside. I'm asking for this additional enforcement power. Can that be done just at the weigh stations, or can that also be done with someone taking it out on the road? Because when they take it on the road, there's obviously other safety concerns of being the portable, and are you stopping the truck in a safe spot, and all the other activities that go with the enforcement out on the highway. So,
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ken Urquhart. I'm the commander of the Commercial Vehicle Enforcement Unit for the State Patrol. Basically, just briefly, there's three different types of out-of-service orders. There may be an out-of-service order placed on a driver for violating certain regulations, an out-of-service order placed on a vehicle that has not been maintained properly, or an out-of-service order issued by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration on a motor carrier, a trucking company, for unsafe operation. And what this provision allows us to do as members of the State Patrol or certain employees of the Department of Transportation is to enforce those out-of-service orders that are issued So, for instance, if I issue an out of service order on a driver for violating the hours of service regulations, and that driver chooses to violate that and then proceed down the highway and is once again inspected by another enforcement person, then they can enforce that out of service order that I issued on that driver.
Well, Mr. Chair, my question is specific. I don't care about the highway patrol. I understand that you're a peace officer and you're trained on that. But I'm asking specifically if when you're granting peace officers power to someone who is not a peace officer, is that restricted just to the area where there's a permanent permit section, you know, where the trucks stop in and get inspected, or does that person have that peace officer power out on the road as well? On the portable ones.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have employees that are commercial vehicle inspectors that are not peace officers, and also the Department of Transportation has transportation specialists that are not peace officers. They are presently enforcing those commercial vehicle regulations and laws as of today. You know, and our employees are authorized under 299D to do that, and this would just allow them to enforce those out-of-service orders, those two different types of employees that exist in the two state departments.
Representative Carney?
I still haven't got a good answer to Representative's question. I think this would allow them to conduct their enforcement outside the station if they found somebody outside there. And once again, look at the vague terminology on 44.15 and 16. It says transportation program specialists and hazardous material program specialists are now going to have powers conferred upon law enforcement. That's direct powers, that's everything. And down there it says conducting inspections at highway stations. Another troubling part is the legislature put in on 44.24, specifically excluding them from having police powers. It says, for no other purposes have the powers conferred by law upon police officers. And now this is striking that. So it was very specific. So I have a real problem with granting police powers to program specialists and hazardous material program specialists. Just boom. Now their peace officers got the right to carry a gun, to handcuffs, get to enforce the law. It's poorly written, and I'd be interested in working an amendment for the floor, but I just don't really like to let this go on past this point.
Okay, any further discussion? I think the motion is before it, so
Mr. Chick, could you restate, or Representative Cornish, restate the exactly what the oral amendment entails?
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, members, my amendment would be to remove Section 68 and renumber the voting agenda, how the council would do that.
That's on members, page 44. Yeah. Everybody understand where the amendment is? Any further discussion? Hearing none, then, all those in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Just a moment. I think the author was about to. Representative Hornstein, it looked, you were about to vote, but it looked like you were about to.
Well,
say something.
Just wanted to get some clarification from DVS, see if they wanted to. Because I wasn't sure if he was just, if Representative Cornish was just removing the issue of police and peace officers, the line associated with that of the entire section. So I wanted to just check with DVS if they wanted to further comment on that.
Welcome back.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the concern that
you should identify yourself again.
Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. Our concern is that this has been an issue that's been brought to our attention, as that we're not in compliance with federal law, and we have we are working really hard to make sure we are in compliance with federal law, because there are financial penalties for us not being in compliance with the law. I'm certainly willing to work with State Patrol and Representative Cornish on some language changes, but I would request that this language be kept in here until we can make some changes to it. But certainly it would be my intent to work with him to ensure that we can get some feedback from Federal Motor Carrier so that we can come up with language that might be more acceptable for
Representative Cornish and the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd rather keep my motion the same as it was. This should have gone through public safety. It is as the only working cop in the whole legislature. It'd been nice you to check with me or the MPQA or somebody before you bring a law that grants peace officer status to regular employees. And so I have a problem with
it. Okay, any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the language as it's written, is it based on federal law?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Pat McCormick, Driver and Vehicle Services, we worked on the language, but not, it's based on the federal requirements in the law. But I think Captain Urquhart has a suggestion that I'm going to, if the committee is okay, he could talk more to it.
Again, identify yourself for the record.
Once again, Mr. Chairman, I'm Ken Urquhart with the State Patrol. I understand Representative Cornish's concern, and I think that this can be accomplished without even referencing the actual term peace officer or peace officer powers. I think the discussion needs to center around authorizing those employees to enforce the out-of-service orders in a very narrow fashion, and I think that's really what the goal here is.
Take it up. My motion remains the same. Let's take it out and work on an amendment to the floor. But I doubt we're going to leave any federal money specifically on this issue. That's kind of a big
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish, if you take out the whole section, you realize that you're leaving the stricken language in there, which says they have the powers conferred by law upon peace officers. So I don't think that you're deleting the amendment rather than trying to work with other language and actually accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Mr. Chair, I read it another way. This stricken language,
a good point,
takes away the... If you go back to the original intent, the stricken language is the original language. That will stay in there once this amendment's removed, or once this section is removed.
Okay. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think the author has, and the department has, offered to work with Representative Cornish for an amendment down the road. I think we need to keep this particular language in. We've lost more than our share of federal money in many different areas, and if they're willing to work and can come to an agreement at a later time, but I think it's important to keep this particular provision in for the time being.
Okay, any further discussion? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Westrom, you have an amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair. I've actually got two amendments, so, but I think the second one you don't have yet.
The one we have is the B2/1 handwritten amendment dealing with behind-the-wheel driving instructions.
Mr. Chair, this pertains to, I think it's section 49 in the bill where we increase the hours required of students. I think there will be probably an increased cost if we're going to increase this as well, from 30 hours to 40 hours, and then also from 6 hours to 10 hours of behind the wheel. Mr. Chair, however, in this language, it does still give parents the option of requesting the 4 additional hours, but it gets at the issue of safe driving training, and it would require those 4 hours to be with winter weather. Mr. Chair, we currently have 6 hours, and we're talking about needing 10 hours in this bill, but we have no requirement for winter weather training. So if they want the additional 4 hours, it has to be in winter weather driving, because all the proponents that walk up here and talk about safety, nobody's talking about the real issue of winter weather driving, which is certainly something they don't get training on in Minnesota, and so this would allow for that if we're really concerned about safety and the parents want it, they can request those four additional hours with winter weather driving conditions.
So you're moving the amendment?
I move the amendment.
Okay, the amendment is before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an oral amendment. I'd like to remove Section 51. New language is on page 36. Members, this has been kind of I really don't like marking driver's licenses. I think it's a very discriminatory thing to do. We've had amendments in the past to do it for immigration status. And now we have an amendment to change the color and put a big R on the front of a license where you're restricted for drinking. And members, a police officer that needs to know that, a trained bartender or wait staff person that needs to know that, that can be put on the back under the restrictions. All they have to do is turn it over and look, and they know there's a restricted license. There's no reason to have a marked license, an X on your forehead, when you go into a grocery store to cash a check, or you do any other business where people need to check your license, and now somehow, not related to alcohol or related to anything else, somehow you are marked as a different person in society. And that's so wrong for us to do. And to have this section in here, and I have a town full of immigrants that we fought this on. You know, members, this is just wrong. And Section G makes no sense either. It reads, any alcohol server or alcohol serving establishment shall refuse service to a person who has been issued a driver's license indicating the person is restricted from consuming alcohol. It doesn't say anything about checking the license. You've just made it illegal to serve someone, and it doesn't say anything about checking the license. And it doesn't say anything about the penalty. So now do they have to check every single license of every single person to come under compliance of this? You know, so that section alone should be out. But the entire part about putting an X on someone's forehead, members. You know, and again, I'm sensitive on this because I have a community with about 25% minority. And we've argued this on the floor before on immigration status. And it isn't right. With the, you can put the restrictions on the back, and anyone that needs those restrictions can look at it and understand that it's a restricted license. There's absolutely no, whether it's pink license plates that we argued on the floor or it's marking a license, that is absolutely the wrong thing for this state to do.
Hey, Representative Junkie, just to clarify your amendment then, that's on page 35, and you're removing the entire section 51 that carries over onto page 36, line 36-18.
That's correct. Just remove section 51.
Okay. Any discussion? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a provision that Representative Ward brought to the committee, and I know he feels pretty strongly about it, involves a constituent in the district. You know, Representative Junkie raises some good points. I'd leave this up to the committee to hash through.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Wagenia.
Representative Junkie, I understand your concern. In eliminating this, and I just don't understand, is the restrictions show up on the back or not? It would continue.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, yes, and there's still B cards issued. There's everything else. It doesn't change. They're just simply going for the nth degree here, and it's,
Yeah,
the restrictions still show up on the card.
On the back. Okay.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carried. We have another amendment by Representative Westrom, B3, Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, this amendment has two small parts to it related to the discussion we heard, or testimony we heard from Ms. Weinholzer and I think I'd never heard affirmation from the author, but I'm assuming if he would have the similar interpretation. This would define immediate family being somebody related by blood or a legally adopted. The second part to this amendment, actually the first part to the amendment, would also clarify that the person age 20 or older could be a driver holding a would be holding a driver's license or a Minnesota ID card, Mr. Chair.
Representative West removed the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the amendment.
The amendment is before us. Mr. Representative West, I have a question of you. Normally I don't get this heavily into the discussion, but what if you have stepchildren that you're raising where you haven't adopted them? You have children that are under joint custody, and yet that child lives in the household, and you may be involved with their learning to drive and driving with them, and one thing and another. I think this would need some more work, but several hands have gone up, Representative Western. So I'll start with Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, just to quickly answer your question, I would welcome that as a friendly amendment. I didn't think of that scenario, and I think you're totally right.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, committee members, speaking as someone who has made serious mistakes making amendments on the fly, I would highly recommend against this amendment. Representative Norton has been working on this particular issue. I think Representative Rustin should go talk to Representative Norton. There has been testimony that is in discussions, and we could certainly address the issues of stepchildren or whatever. But I think to do this on the fly is not a good idea, and it's not good law.
Representative Heckert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the amendment under F that Representative Weston has, and maybe Ms. Weinholzer wants to speak to this, but I think what you said was anybody, immediate family would mean anybody related by blood, married, or legally adopted.
Married,
I think that might take care of your speech. And maybe she wants to speak to that.
Do you want to comment on that?
Mr. Chair, Gail Weinel for the AAA. Yes, what we agreed with Representative Norton and other of the bill authors was that family would be defined by marriage, legal adoption, or blood. Those were the three provisions that we were that we had agreed to. I should mention one thing, and I missed, I should have clarified this earlier, Representative Westrom, the first part of your amendment that talked about the identification card holder, when you made the reference earlier in the discussion about not being able to be with your teen drivers because you're not a licensed driver, it does say one of the exemptions is obviously that you were referring to was accompanied by a licensed driver of at least 25 years of age, and obviously that was the area that caused you concern. But if you refer to line 35.6, all of this it allows for a parent or guardian, and that parent or guardian does not need to be licensed.
Representative Cole.
Mr. Chair, I think we've covered it. I think I'd like to offer an amendment to the amendment, which I believe is in order. I think that the way that this needs to read is, for the purposes of this section, immediate family means related by blood, comma, adoption, comma, or marriage. And then we take care of the stepchildren issue. I believe that's consistent with what Ms. Weinholzer just spoke to, and that was what I jotted down when she mentioned that earlier as well. So I'd like to move that amendment to the Western Amendment.
That motion before us. Any discussion on the Coles amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would incorporate that in my amendment as a friendly amendment.
That's incorporated into the amendment. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein just gave me a head shake that was okay. I support the amendment. I do still have that concern that was raised slightly by the chair. We have many families out here that are not married members, and we have individuals that have been in a committed relationship for more than 20 years that have blended families now. And so we're actually not including them that in this particular immediate family. And so I'm hoping that Representative Hornstein, along with those that have been integral parts of this bill, think past what immediate family may mean to you or what we may like it to mean, and not be able to cause harm or undue consequences to the many families that are out there that choose not to be married.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, just briefly to Representative Reinholzer, that is one scenario, but it doesn't cover it if I have an aunt or a niece or a nephew that I want to drive with, or they want me to drive with them. So I would urge members to keep this language in.
Representative Westrom, just a question then. Where would you say, now with the amendment that was incorporated, including marriage, where would grandparents fit in if they happen to be... my question, Representative Anderson. If you have a situation where you have the joint custody one that I was describing earlier, and you happen to be step-grandparents, not related by blood, is marriage broad enough to incorporate them? I don't think it is. I think we're trying to define a family here. I think Representative Mahoney was correct. We're trying to define a family a bit on the fly here, and I'm not sure that I'm totally comfortable with some of the...
Mr. Chair, I think you raise a good point for another amendment, but this certainly moves it much further in the right direction than it is currently, because they're not even covered under the current language.
That's I was just reminded that the age 20 there, maybe that's, although I did hear Representative, what did you say, you were a grandparent at 25? We did get dangerously close. I forgot Representative Tolbert's comment. At 29, I thought. I guess my concern would be covered by the age. Yeah. Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment then? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Mr. Chair,
I hear a voice. Okay. Representative.
I had tried to move the amendment a little earlier and didn't mean to interrupt. Repeal that amendment. I withdrew it, but I'd like to offer that amendment, oral amendment, at this point. And that would be to page 2 and 3, Article 1, Sections 1 and 2. I move to delete those two sections.
Okay, the motion is before it. That's the handwritten amendment that...
Actually, Mr. Chair, it's not. It's an oral amendment.
Oh, the oral amendment.
Oral amendment, yes.
Okay, sure. Could you repeat that one again?
It is on page 2 and 3, sections 1, remove, article 1, remove sections 1 and 2.
Okay.
And to the amendment.
This is the one on the bus.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Already got the amendment. Representative Peterson.
And Mr. Chair, we had this a little bit of a debate in the transportation policy, and we had some protracted debate. There was equal arguments on both sides. I think there was some significant disagreement on what we do here at the legislature in terms of mandating, particularly for our public school districts, some policies of which are already established in law under Section 123B88, we've given that authority to the local school districts to determine the policies that are required. And so in this broad-reaching regulation here, we're trying to take that away from those school districts and mandate from a state heavy-handed perspective to make sure that they abide by some rules that I'm not even sure there's a problem with. In fact, I have not heard an outcry from the local school district saying we need some regulation in this because we've got unsafe practices in our local areas. And so, Mr. Chair and members, I would move to strike those two sections and perhaps give the Department of Education, which is currently working on this through the auditor's report, give them a chance to respond to this and put together the contract criteria that is less invasive than statute.
Okay, Representative Dabney.
Good morning, Representative, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to speak against the Severson Amendment. Members, in January of this year, the Office of Legislative Auditor came forward with a report on school bus safety that I can only describe as fairly scathing in that kind of dry Joe Friday auditor sort of language. What they found was that, and I'll quote, school district transportation management practices range from excellent to poor, with some districts follow best practices in contracting for transportation services, but others fall far short. They found districts that do not ensure that school bus drivers are qualified or adequately oversee the contractors who provide transportation for the district. They found school districts that did not even verify that the school bus drivers had driver's licenses. They found districts that few districts are the ones they visited adequately oversee the drug and alcohol tests that we require. One district that they visited had no written contract with their school bus provider. Another one had a contract, but all it stipulated was the cost associated with the contract, no performance guidelines whatsoever. House File 3469, which is the language that's in Article 1 that Representative Severson is seeking to strike, is a significant compromise from House File 2024 that I introduced last year on this topic. It presents no burden to school districts. It's silent as to whether school districts provide school bus transportation to students or themselves or contract out. It does simply clarify that the responsibility for student safety remains with the school district and that they must discuss these issues with the provider if they choose to contract out, and have it either as part of the contract, an addendum to the contract, a memorandum of understanding, or something else. It's supported by the Minnesota Association of School Bus Transporters and the Service Employees International Union. I'd ask for your opposition to the Severson Amendment.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, members, I support the amendment. I've heard from not only school districts, but two different bus services in my district that find this very intrusive. And look at the information required from page 2, from 231 to 3.7. A lot of this stuff doesn't have anything to do with safety. Defining regular school breaks and interruptions to employment, there's a lot of just what might even be private daddy in here under cause from service. People are otherwise removed. So it's a lot more far reaching than the auditor's report or the intent, I think.
Representative Heidegger.
Thank you. We heard this also in education policy, and it was, I don't know what it was, 11 to 10 vote or whatever it may be, but it was very, 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 very close. But I, too, Representative Cornish, have heard from not only my independent contractors, school bus drivers, but also all my school boards are all against this because it's going to put a dramatic burden. I differ with you, Representative Dabney, on that. In regards to the legislative audit, there's been a lot of legislative audits you and I have argued about, and one in particular, the integration aid. And they have come out with a report, very scalding, saying that we need to do something with that, and we haven't. And that's a lot of money sitting there. But with this, it would put an additional burden on school districts. The cost will hurt the kids. And right now, we have a lot of school districts in SOD. And this is going to require, it's going to be a paper nightmare for them to go through all of the things that, if you look at page 2, what's listed there. There are a lot of mandates there. And I don't think this is the time to do it when we're not giving school districts more money. And I know that it will financially be a burden on every one of my school districts.
Okay, any further discussion or simple?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Severson, for bringing the amendment. I support the amendment. In addition to some of the other issues that have been discussed, if you look on page 2, line 19 to 22, not only we're requiring private bus companies to make public information regarding salaries, wages, and benefits, something they're not required to do right now. That's terribly concerning to me. Members, when I was in college at the University of St. Thomas, I actually actually drove school bus for a private bus company. I drove. They had a contract with this with the St. Paul School District, and I would have been Representative Mahoney. I was driving St. Paul students right around your neighborhood, probably.
Under your control. How old were you?
I was no longer under provisional license status, Representative Duncan, so we were okay. But members, I think that this not only is going to cause a burden on our school district, it is going to cause a burden on some of our transportation providers. The information that we're requiring to be shared is private information that we shouldn't be forcing employers to turn over to the school districts unless the school district contracts with the provider to get that information. There's certainly nothing that would prevent them from doing that when they establish a contract. So I support the Severson Amendment and urge members to do so as well.
Mr. Paul, I thought your comments there about when you were driving bus would be similar to mine when I was certified to speech driver's ed. It might have been screened out. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the support on this amendment. Members, this is burdensome to our school districts. I don't even know what the fiscal note is on the local level, but I can tell you that when we have not funded our schools properly, and then we impose another unfunded mandate upon them, it does nothing but heap coals upon their head. This is not the direction we want to go. There are two two organizations that oppose this, the Minnesota Boards Association and the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. Both are in opposition to this, of which have 150 school bus companies and over 6,000 school bus drivers. Members, this is a bad provision. This is what exactly we are not supposed to be doing here at the legislature, getting into local business, and I would appreciate your support.
Okay, before we vote, Representative Mahoney had his hand up.
Mr. Chair and members, there's a lot of provisions in this section that are needed, and we do need to figure out who's driving our kids to and from school. I, too, also was a school bus driver, which is really scary.
We have a lot in common, Representative Mahoney.
We can go through tales, but this is a pretty decent, this is a good provision. We need to keep this particular provision in. If there are certain little parts that are onerous, we can certainly work on them before we get to the next stage.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would strongly oppose the amendment. I think this is really important safety provisions. We did have, as Representative Severson said, a spirited discussion in committee, and you know there was a divided vote, but I do believe this is needed, and Representative Dabney has done a really good job in explaining it, and we ought to keep this in the bill.
Okay, all those in favor, then, of striking Section 1 on page 2 all the way through page 3, line 3.20, is that correct? Or 3.21. Okay. Everybody clear on what the amendment is? Any further discussion? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion defeated. Do you want division? Okay, division has been requested. All those in favor of the amendment, raise their hand. Okay, there being 11 yeses and 15 noes, motion was defeated. Any more amendments? Let me ask a question. We do have a member that has an amendment that's being drafted. Gives me one of two options. One is to temporarily lay the bill over unless there's enough discussion to carry it through.
I have an oral amendment.
Oh, you have an oral amendment as well? Okay, so...
can we consider that one?
Yeah, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, page 35, lines
16 through 21, I think my amendment would be to get rid of the strict restriction and restore the language as it was. I think I do need to keep the E in place on line 35.16. But just on lines 35.20 and 21 to restore the stricken language, I guess, is my oral amendment.
Okay, everybody have that?
Page 35, lines 20 and 21, restore the stricken language.
Okay, Representative Solberg.
This is a major change, I think, in someone who has a provisional license. If they have a moving violation when they're 16, instead of having their driver's license suspended for 12 months, they're up to 2 years. Now, if they have that same moving violations when they're 17 years and 11 months, their restriction is under this would be only 1 month. I think that the 2 years is an expansion that it seems to me a 1 year seems reasonable, but to have some kind of consistency in it to keep the old language in it, which is the restriction for 1 year instead of increasing it to a potential 2 years.
Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those. Representative Hornstein, I was about to vote. You were talking. I should solicit your advice. I missed on one earlier on driver's education. I didn't solicit your advice on that one, but
that's okay.
My apology.
No problem. This is actually not related to Representative Norton's provisional driver's license. This is a Representative Dill's. Had this in his logbook and training hours still, so I don't really have a sense of, I think the committee should act as it sees fit. I don't know if Representative Bill is here.
You listen.
Sorry, the committee has that habit on its own, but that's...
Well, I have no advice.
This morning.
Mr. Chair, I have no advice for the
committee. Motion is before us by Representative Solberg. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Legislative career has been successful.
We have a discussion on the bill, and then we have an amendment that we're waiting on. Representative Lincetsky.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm thinking about drafting an amendment, but I want to ask Representative Hornstein about it. There's a couple of things in the bill. One is a spotter truck. I don't even know what that is, but they're being exempted from paying tax, and I'm wondering what that's about. And I guess had I known it was there, I would have asked it would be removed to go to taxes. So I might do that amendment, but can you, Section 5?
What page?
Well, actually, I can't find it. Hang on a second. I'm sorry. Page 6, Section 5, line 612. And I don't know why we'd be exempting some motor vehicle from paying taxes. I don't know if you know anything about what that is, but...
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow brought this to our attention. I don't remember if it was at the behest of an agency. Maybe Mr. Burris has more of a recollection. I would be concerned, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincetsky, if there was a tax, that's where it should be. So, Mr. Burris, can you help clarify your question?
Mr. Chair and members, spotter trucks are a type of vehicle that trucking companies, freight operations use. The vehicle is essentially a sort of stripped down truck tractor, and it's typically the vehicles are used for moving trailers around just within the freight shipping operation, and don't normally operate on public roads. And there was a registration issue with these types of vehicles. they aren't qualified under federal regulations to be able to be operated on public roads typically, because they don't have the typical types of safety equipment built in, because the design of the truck is more for within a private business facility type use, just for moving trailers around. And so this is one piece of a larger provision that would allow limited use of spotter trucks on public roads, essentially for them to move from one part of the operation to a nearby location, sort of short distance use of public roads where the truck is typically just used within the shipping operation. And this exemption is a piece of that. Would be an exemption from the vehicle registration taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my preference would be, I'd like to hear what Representative Hornstein is thinking, is just to orally move to take out Article 1, Section 5. I understand what spotter truck now is, but I think the tax committee would like some say in whether or not we should pay taxes.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, I would respect the wishes of the tax chair and understand that we have some pretty tight rules around you know, these kinds of provisions being heard there, and if that's her preference, I'd certainly defer to Carolyn Chesky. I think the Truckers Association actually brought this to us, not an agency. I would defer if the tax chair would like to see if that's fine with me.
Carolyn Chesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move then to strike Article 1, Section 5 from the bill.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Holbert.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would support that motion. Secondly, if they are using the public highways at any time, they should be having some registration on it, even if it's a short distance. And secondly, I think that if they really wanted to just move it a short distance, they could put it on a trailer, as a licensed trailer, and move it, and that would be fine.
Any further discussion? Let's see, we've got several hands up. Representative Hackbart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I speak against the amendments. I'm not sure that these things are being taxed now, and I think it's similar to like a farm tractor that might be moving down the road just for a short amount of time, maybe to go from the farm yard to the field or something. This is a truck that might be just traveling down the road a block to go to another lot or something. And, Mr. Chairman, I think the Trucker Association is up at the table now, and I'd like to have a clarification on the issue.
Okay. If you could identify yourself for the record.
I do that. My name is Jeremy Estenson. I work for the Minnesota Trucking Association. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the reason this provision came forward is because for at least 20 years and maybe longer, these types of vehicles have been able to be licensed. Recently, DVS, in auditing its own rules, discovered that it should not have ever been licensing these vehicles. So they were, for all practical purposes, operating legally on the road insofar as they had a license, but they should have never had a license. So this is essentially a five-year time frame where folks who have got these vehicles can depreciate them out, then buy the appropriate type of for on-road use vehicle, and in this five-year period, they still have to meet all of the DOT safety standards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, just for clarification, so folks understand my motion, I'm silent on my opinion on this. It's a tax bill. And just as Representative Hornstein removed other tax bills in this bill in his author's amendment, it appears that this is just one that was missed. And we have had the process of taking tax items, whether they raise money, lower money, or change the structure around, they all go through taxes. So the tax committee might think this is a great idea, but if this doesn't come out, then we'll need to re-refer this bill to taxes from the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually do support this provision, but I agree with Chair Lincheski. We have bipartisanly in the past sent all these things to the tax committee. I absolutely support this, and I'll work with truckers or anybody else to make sure that it gets out of the tax committee. But the tax committee, on a bipartisan basis, when it was chaired by Chair Abrams and now Lincheski, and I believe going back even before my time, considered all the tax decisions, so it really should go there, and I support the amendment.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe we're approaching some consensus around support of this.
Any further discussion then on the Lenchetsky Amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carried. Any more amendments? I understand that there are perhaps two lists maybe being drafted yet. So any further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not have an amendment for the particular provision. I believe it's in Chapter 37. It's Get Your Stuff Back Bill, which is a fairly controversial bill. We've had some discussion in committees again, and we had some of the interested parties come to the committee and vet their concerns, their legitimate concerns. I don't know that the Get Your Stuff Back Bill, which speaks to impounded vehicles and being able to get your belongings back, I'm not bringing an amendment forward here. I'll have one for the floor members, but if you might want to get a little educated on this process. It's interesting. It's got some emotion to it, but when the long and the short of it comes to the table, it's denying the tow people their ability to negotiate. So I would just wanted to make that as a comment for this committee.
To allow the two authors of a couple of amendments to get those drafted, what I'm going to do, I'm told that Representative Bingham has a bill that will take about 5 minutes. Not even. What we'll do, so they get a chance to get their amendments ready, we did try to keep this one moving this morning. Didn't realize there would be quite as many amendments, but the chair temporarily lays the bill over and we'll drop down on the agenda because Representative Bingham has been patiently waiting. You are further down on the agenda, but take your bill up now, and then hopefully those other amendments will be ready shortly. So
Mr. Chair, I would move Transportation Policy Finance Division Report for House File 3490.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 3490 to be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Bingham, if you'd explain the bill.
Thank you. The only reason this would take more than 5 minutes is because I see there are a lot of freshmen on this committee, and maybe it's a very friendly freshman committee, right? No. Okay. Thanks for the sympathy laugh, Representative Mahoney. House File 3490 establishes that driver's license be. We have a reinstatement requirement for persons whose licenses were revoked for violating controlled substance laws in the process of being in a motor vehicle. This was inadvertently, it will require that you pay the $30 reinstatement fee and take the, that you pay the $30 reinstatement fee and take the road test and knowledge test over again for your driver's license. This was inadvertently taken out of the bill in 1993 when the statute was enacted. So that's really the bill. It establishes a $30 fee for reinstatement of your driver's license.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
We really wanted to take 5 minutes.
I know.
Took less. Let's see if we can.
I'm sitting, Mr. Chair. I'm taking my questions to the floor.
I'm sorry.
What if we have another one that's fairly quick?
Okay.
Representative Amador, does yours take a fairly short a period of time? We'll take up House File 4055 and Senate File 3669 by Representative Madour and Representative Severson.
Mr. Chair, I move the Transportation Policy and Finance Division report for House File 4055, First Committee Engrossment. and for the other one was, I'm sorry, Senate File 3669.
Okay, the motion to adopt the report is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Severson.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 3669, second engrossment be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? All those in favor, then? We need the follow-up motion.
We need to move that
the language from House File 4055, the first committee engrossment, be inserted into Senate File 3669. We need that motion first.
Mr. Chair, I would move that to amend the language from House File 4055, first committee engrossment, into Senate File 3669.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Now we have Senate File 3369 before us as amended.
Could we have a brief explanation of the bill?
I didn't hear it.
Could we have a brief explanation of
the bill? No, we're not voting on the bill yet. We were just substituting and getting the House language into the Senate file. And at this point now we will hear from the authors on what the bill contains.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Clark, I'm happy if you're just ready to move the bill and to vote on it. Let's go. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What this bill does is it was brought to me by Senator Torres Ray with regards to the impact on small businesses with transportation projects. Oftentimes, small businesses are run by individuals who might not be engaged in their local community or their chamber of commerce, and they miss updates on transportation projects that are moving through their communities. So what we did was we put together a group of stakeholders, including MnDOT, representatives from DEED, and some of the groups that represent these small businesses, and we said, what can we do to make this better? And they came up with this report on the mitigation of transportation construction impact. There is a revised fiscal note. I just want to be sure that everybody has it. The labeling on it is a fiscal note for bill number H4055-1CE. And that significantly lowers the fiscal note from the original hearing that we had. And basically what we do is we ask that MnDOT and DEED and local areas of Chamber and the Metropolitan Council to be sure that information is fed through to the local businesses to give them options to prepare for those transportation projects and to come up with a report on how to implement it. So it's basically creating a new standard operating plan for small business communication.
Any further discussion then on the motion of principle?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Madour, I have never heard of this being a problem with any of the small businesses that I represent. MnDOT, our local papers, the local community scream from the mountaintops when there's going to be a construction project coming through and people hear about it. So can you, I'm not aware that there's a problem, so why are we trying to do a fix? Can you educate me a little bit, please?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair and Representative Cole. It hasn't really been a problem in some of the communities where the small businesses are perhaps either attached to larger businesses or they've been established in the community for a long time. What we have are situations, for example, in my city, Apple Valley, we have the Cedar Avenue BRT coming in. We have a lot of small business owners that are just recently started their businesses. They really don't understand who they're supposed to be talking with if they haven't made their connections with the local chambers. And what happens is they get in on the back door of discussions, and they're often upset that they haven't been notified that the plan was presented and that they maybe should have attended a meeting. So this just helps MnDOT, Metropolitan Council, and the chambers to be sure that they're communicating at the beginning and that local businesses are all informed without reliance that they attended one local city chamber meeting regarding these projects. We also have this issue coming on with the Cedar Avenue corridor improvements. Anywhere, any place that we're doing new transportation improvement projects that may close off a street, water main, a business that requires a drive-up facility, let's say a coffee shop or something like that, that they would lose access temporarily because of construction. It just has to be sure that MnDOT is following, and the Metropolitan Council, that they're following a plan to say, we have made sure that we've gone to the extra step to notify small business. So it really just helps them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Medora, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but I have to be honest, you know, I see we're doing a study here and we're going to take half an FTE from MnDOT at a time when MnDOT is already telling us they don't have enough money and enough people to do what they should be doing. I'm not aware that we have much of a problem. I haven't heard of this being a problem, and it's a nice to have, but I'm just not sure, given our current fiscal conditions here in the state and our billion-dollar budget deficit is to have to have, and I don't support your bill because of that. Again, it's a nice to have. I don't have a problem with MnDOT doing it, but we need to be focusing on getting the job done that needs to get done, and I'm just not sure that this is a part of that. Representative Clark.
I just want to strongly support this bill. You know, I represent an inner-city area with lots of small businesses where construction is going on Main Street. And you'd be surprised, especially if there's any language barrier or not, people do not know what resources are available to them. They know that something's coming. They know there's going to be a construction period. But, you know, we lose small businesses because of a lot of this construction. And one of the things we found out in Lake Street is that the small businesses had to get together with their local Chamber of Commerce to really get the kind of help that they needed, even keep the doors open and get signs that would say, you know, still open for business and all that kind of thing, and we lost a number of businesses. So I think this is really important, and I am really glad you brought it before.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, then let's do it. This is proposing a study to decide what we're going to do maybe in the future. If it's that important, then let's do it. Let's fund it. Let's do it. Let's do the outreach. That's not what the bill does. We're doing another study that's going to cost us however much, $43,000 over the next 2 years. That's $43,000 of staff time that we could be using. If it's that big of a deal, then let's fund it. But we're not doing it with this bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Clark, again, that's exactly the reason why this bill was brought forward, was the fact that we have a great number of small businesses. And Representative Coles, you're right, let's do it. The problem is that there is not a standard operating procedure for notifying small businesses in MnDOT. We have, right now, if there's an environmental impact study, there's virtually a checklist that says we are supposed to notify this person, this agency, this local business community. It tells them exactly who they're supposed to be notifying. And the business community can be rest assured that if there is an environmental impact study, they are going to be notified about that. We are not doing that for transportation projects. So what we're saying is we would like to use a study to develop a new policy to be sure that we are doing our very best at every opportunity to inform small businesses how they can stay in business, how they can continue to be successful and stay in our community should a construction project impact access to their business for either a day, a month, or a year. They need to know how to go about working with their local government. They need to understand how they can apply for permits. Oftentimes a small business owner is somebody who's been let go and they decide to take a chance on developing a small business. They are not a city official that understands all the different components about what's required to get a permit, to understand a report, or to even know who they're supposed to talk to. So what we're trying to do is to ask MnDOT, the Metropolitan Council indeed, who have all met with me, and they are very happy and supportive of this bill, to say thank you for helping us to get to the point where we can create a plan to be sure we're doing everything we can. And you have to also remember, Representative Coles, after the override of the governor's veto on the transportation bill, we have hundreds of projects that are now going to be funded and implemented. There is not a strategy at MnDOT to be able to deal with that. So this is a way for MnDOT. They were at the table with this. They are very supportive. I believe Ms. Parker is here, that she can speak to it. We met over several occasions, and everybody at the table, this is a great idea. Thank you for bringing it forward, is what we heard. So I would encourage the committee to endorse them.
case, and that other amendment is ready for that other bill. So if we can be fairly quickly on this one, then we'll revert back.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I looked at the fiscal notes, was prepared some time ago. It looks like it's the first step is the 8,000, and the implementation of that would be in the next biennium.
That's correct.
As we look at the system of students.
Okay, Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would very briefly say I support this because I have heard from a number of my small businesses during a recent construction project in some of the towns that I represent. So I do actually hear from businesses on just exactly this issue, and I think it would help that situation.
Okay, any further discussion then on the Severson motion that Senate File 3669, the second engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Madour, being that you're at the table, does it take long to do 3558?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Representative Severson, would you care to move the division report?
Mr. Chair, I move the Transportation Policy and Finance Division report for House File 3558, first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Severson?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 3558, first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and may refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is hopefully pretty simple, and we'll move it right along. It's for the issuance of temporary permits for passenger vehicles being used in the 2008 U.S. Women's Open. It's a gender issue here. We allow this for the men's golf, and we don't allow it for the women. So we would like to have that courtesy extended to our gender.
Okay. And the motion is before us. So any discussion? You have a witness at the table. We generally just answer questions. So,
Mr. Chair, I'm Alyssa Slander with the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. I'm just here to answer questions.
Okay. Any discussion?
Representative Madour, I think I do like this bill. but I just want to make sure I understand what we're, and I think Ms. Slander coming down answers my question. We're talking about allowing dealers, I assume, to issue vehicles to the tournament and give them a special permit so they can drive around with those new vehicles and be used by the players or by other. Is that, do I understand that the purpose of the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Cole, that's correct.
Mr. Chair, Representative Madour, I look forward to supporting your bill.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Yeah. Then Representative Severson's motion on House File 3558, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you
for your patience. We'll now revert back to something that Representative Ornstein is here.
Yeah.
Oh, there we are. The amendment that we were waiting on has been prepared. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I won't belabor the point, but this amendment that Representative Norton and AAA helped me draft takes care of half of my concern, which is a chunk of individuals. If you have a couple that got together where a son was one and by the woman in the household, and another son was five by the male in the household, at 19 and 15, they no longer would be able to drive under this current way that the bill is moving. And so I'm wanting to make sure that our blended families have an opportunity not to have negative consequences put towards them. It doesn't address if that five-year-old ended up living with his mother and that type of a relationship, but at least the individuals that are permanently members of the same household who have been raised as brothers and sisters still will be able to function as a family.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, let's see. Chair, I think Representative Leader was the one that originally made the motion. He left. Representative Severson, do you want to make, we have to remake the motion that if he recommended it pass and be referred to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I move that House File 380, First Committee on Growth, amended be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Let's see, I think you have another bill up.
Yeah.
Representative Warren.
I don't have it. Sorry.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Severson, you're making all kinds of motions.
Yeah, I apologize. I've been corrected here. I stand corrected. My motion should have been to House File 3800, not 380.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't hear that as well.
I apologize. I just wanted to amend that motion to make sure we got the right bill moved. Thank you.
Okay. Is everybody clear that that was 3800 that we were on quite a while this morning that we just passed? I don't know that we need to re-vote. We're just clarifying the record that it was 3,800. Representative Ornstein, Rep. Sorensen, this would be House File 3486.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And this came from Representative from your committee directly here. The chair moves that House File 3486 be recommended to pass, and this one is straight policy, so it's go to the General Register.
Yeah, that would be
right.
Good.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Be placed in the General Register.
Yep, Mr. Chair.
Representative Peterson.
Representative Leader gave me the ominous responsibility for moving the study, and I don't want to disappoint him. Do you want me to move the transportation policy report on this one?
Oh, the division report. That's what I was asking if it had been, it came directly here, but it came through leaders' committee then. Okay, we need to adopt the division report. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I move transportation policy finance division report for House File 3486, First Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Severson.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 3486, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Morenstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 3486 is a technical change for motor carrier fuel taxes, and I will have Ms. McCormick briefly outline the provisions of the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. In 2005, as you may remember, Driver and Vehicle Services budget was changed to have the filing fees and the fees that we collect in order to pay for the services that we provide put into special revenue accounts. We have a driver services special revenue account and a vehicle services revenue account. And inadvertently, the filing fees that we pay in administering the International Fuel Agreement for motor carriers were not deposited or were not included in the statutory provisions. The fees have been being put into the vehicle services special revenue account since this was enacted in 2005. And so what we're asking is that we be allowed to keep those funds in the special revenue account because those are the fees that pay for the services that we provide in administering this program. And so it's retroactive to when the budget language went into effect, which was August 1st of 2005.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. That brings us down to Representative Taylor. And again, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would move the Transportation Policy and Finance Division report for House File 3036, first committee engrossment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate File 3224, the second engrossment, be recommended to pass and place on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Please explain the bill. Okay.
Very simply, this bill establishes a committee on non-motorized transportation. There has been a state bicycle committee in existence for 20 years, and there was a desire of that group to expand to address other non-motorized traffic as well, particularly pedestrians. So this bill just simply changes that title and codifies the powers and duties. That's just about all that there is to that, and it does have an expiration in 2014. So I ask for your support, members.
Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Taylor renews her motion that Senate File 3224 be recommended to pass and placed in the general register. All those, Representative Tunkey.
For that motion, I guess I'm just asking in light of my bill yesterday that had to go to rules because we were establishing task force advisors, many other things. Does this have to stop in rules just so it doesn't get sent back from the court?
Representative Taylor, your task force, that's a new one?
Well, this is, I guess I'm not sure if that would be necessary because it's really just renaming an advisory council that has been in existence just simply to expand the fact that it deals with pedestrians and other non-motorized traffic as well. But I do have...
Mr. Chair, again, it doesn't say renaming. Your title says authorizing creation of an advisory council. And so I don't want you to get stuck on the floor of the referral to go back, and now you're sitting for a week extra.
That's why I asked Representative Taylor, is it a new one or not?
Let me just clarify with the Department of Transportation.
The new one, clearly it has to go to rules. If it's strictly a name change, that... We may still send it there. It shouldn't be any problem. So maybe that would be the better motion if it's in the gray area as to whether it's new or not. So why don't we?
Mr. Chair, that would be fine.
Okay. Why don't Representative Taylor changes her motion then to re-refer to rules rather than general register. Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Okay. Representative Severson, we're going to drop down to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And that's House File 3706, if you care to move the report.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Transportation Policy Finance Division report for House File 3706.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I move House File 3706 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. And on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a department bill, and basically what it does is when we have veterans, we have three veterans plates that were initially started, and when we start those veterans plates, we typically put on a $5 surcharge until the monies have been recouped for the restamping of those particular plates. To date, I think we've sold the required 856 some plates to recoup those costs, and so what we're simply doing in this is repealing that $5 surcharge on those plates, so the future plates that are sold will not have that surcharge.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then Representative.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
As I read Subdivision 2A, it's a collective surcharge of $5 on each $10 fee collected. Okay, I was just reading it wrong.
and it just eliminates that. So I understand that. So Representative Stevenson renews his motion that if the bill be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Ways and Means Subcommittee. Representative Spartan.
Oh, thank you. Representative Stevenson, what is the fiscal impact of that?
There will be about $5,000, or I'm sorry, $4,000.
$4,000.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Representative Kalin has requested that his bill be postponed, so I think that brings us down to Representative Hortman. So the chair moves that Senate file 3137, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed in the general register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill does a very small technical thing. It transfers the responsibility for operating North Star Commuter Rail from the Department of Transportation to Metropolitan Council, and that's because the Department of Transportation is involved in the capital part of it and the planning. Mm-hmm. The actual operation of the transit system in the Twin Cities is performed by Metropolitan Council, so it makes most sense that they do this piece also.
Any discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. That's it. And we meet probably next Tuesday. Tentatively, you'll get formal notice, but I think our next meeting is going to be next Tuesday. We got through the agenda today. So with that, meeting is adjourned.